Carolla and Dr. Drew.
Loveline, coast to coast.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is not Dr. Drew. This is Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben is a OGBYN. He is a gynecologist, too. Do you have... Can you be both or neither?
Actually, usually are both.
You have to be.
You're kind of both.
If you're an OGBYN, you're a gynecologist, too?
Right. You're an obstetrician and a gynecologist.
Because the GYN is the gyn part?
You got it.
I've always been curious about how that works, because, first off, what other way do they... I'm trying to think of other examples where they lay out all the letters that way. In that way. I mean, USA is United States of America, but you got the first two letters and then the following three.
Uh-huh.
So always a little confusing to me.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I think I see what you're saying. But if you know where those letters are coming from, then it's not so confusing to you.
All right.
Feel very comfortable
so
with them.
The OB is obstetrics,
you
and the GYN, or the GYN, is gynecology.
Right.
And that is his specialty, and that's going to be our specialty tonight. I mean, we'll take some of the regular calls, but we're going to pretty much stick to the vagina tonight. And we may stray into the penis or scrotum, but we're going to try to really focus and hunker down on the vagina. Dr. Ben is board certified, qualified, and has seen many a vagina. He was producer Ann's gynecologist, right? Or obstetric. What's the difference? What's obstetrics?
Obstetrics is more the caring of women who are pregnant, and gynecology falls into the realm of them not being pregnant.
Right. And you saw the ultrasound of her twins and the whole thing, right?
I actually was... taking care of her right up to the delivery, and then I had to go on a trip, and my partner delivered Anne. But I got to see those twins on ultrasound many a times.
Well, how courageous of you to stay with her to the very end and then go to Cancun.
And then drop her off.
As she was screaming in pain in a hospital bed. You're a dynamite individual. Speaking of, all right, so that's what we're going to be talking about. So line up those questions tonight, and like I said, we'll work in some of our other calls. But we're going to talk about new forms of contraception and STDs, pregnancy, and all that stuff, because Dr. Ben really knows his way around the vagina. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. And just on a personal note, I must say, I didn't share this with people last night, but I flew in from Montreal last night, and I flew in through Toronto. $1,100 plane ticket, by the way, one way with, a layover in Toronto. Yeah, $1,100 out of my own goddamn pocket. And guess what movie they were playing on my $1,100 flight from Toronto? Air Bud 3. This time the dog's playing, he's playing soccer. Soccer. Goddamn soccer. First off, no one likes soccer except for, I don't even think Canadians like soccer, so I don't know what their excuse is. Air Bud 3, they're playing on my $1,100 plane ticket, and I'm looking around in the first class cabin, or the business cabin, as they have in there in Air Canada. They don't have a first class, they just have the business class and then the coach. To me, I wish they'd call coach first class. I could feel better about myself. I'm not coach. I'm sorry. The business class first class. But that's another subject. I'm looking around. There's no one under 50. And they're all watching Air Bud 3. They're watching a Labrador kick soccer goals, essentially, and young love blossom between 11-year-olds. And I look in the back of the plane. Out of the 220 people on the plane, there were four people under the age of 26. Air Bud 3, everybody. At what point can you sue an airline? And by the way, at a certain point, if anyone's listening from airlines, look, if you're out of material, just run some old Hitchcock film. Run The Birds. Run The Shining. You know, run Rocky 1 or something. Just run something.
They had the wrong demos on that flight.
Yeah. How many folks fly in the middle of the week from Toronto to L.A. are under 12? They should really look into Air Bud 3, everyone. The dog is playing soccer now. And don't you have to eliminate the word air eventually if the dog is no longer playing
That might be a product placement issue, Adam. I'm not sure about that.
All right. Well, you stick to the vaginas. I'll stick to the movie industry. You know, ironically, the dog that played Air Bud in that movie 5 years ago had to have his leg amputated.
Oh.
Did you know about that?
Ouch.
Yeah, true story. But
more soccer for that.
No, this one played basketball. That was probably a cinematic triumph compared to the piece of ass I had to see. But soccer, for Christ's sake. Janet?
Hi.
You're 22.
I'm 22. Hi, Dr. Ben. Hi, Adam.
Hey.
Hi, Janet.
This is my deal. I've been on the pill for about 5 years. I'm taking Orthonavum 135
mm-hmm.
and taking it every day, 5 years, same time during the day. I've been spotting. I've been nauseous. I've had some diarrhea, and I'm spotting. Like, I've been spotting for the past 5 days, I think, and I'm only a week into my pills.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about any other medications that you've been on recently, specifically antibiotics.
Nothing.
And as far as any other medical problems, anything else? Are you pretty healthy otherwise?
I smoke cigarettes, and I do have a history of depression, but that's about it. I was on Paxil. I haven't been taking it probably for the past year. My psychiatrist or my whatever advised me not to
mm-hmm.
take it anymore. I was feeling fine, and that's about it. Nothing right now. Nothing at all.
Okay. So, first of all, the easiest thing to do about that is just to go ahead and take a home pregnancy test. It's just as good as anything that we would do for you in the office. And you're right. You know, any abnormal bleeding, mm-hmm. even on the pill, the first thing we'd like to make sure of is that we're not dealing with a pregnancy. Once we find out that you're not actually pregnant, there's a couple of other things, Janet, that can cause the spotting, and that can easily be evaluated in the office. For example, looking at your cervix, making sure that your pap smear, your last pap smear was normal.
About 6 months ago, I went into Planned Parenthood, and I've had a lot of problems with Planned Parenthood, but luckily I have insurance now. I had an abnormal pap. I actually, about a year ago, I got trick.
Yeah.
And I got that taken care of. My current boyfriend also got that taken care of. I don't know if he had it or not. He just took the medication, got it taken care of.
Janet, just to explain to the listening audience, trichomonas is actually a sexually transmitted disease mm-hmm. that can usually cause a pretty nasty discharge. And like any infection, can cause actually bleeding, which you're talking to me about, but
it was 8 months ago.
I'll tell you, I don't want to turn the show about myself, but thank God I beat off at about 8:45 before I came in here tonight, because this has just soured me.
I cannot
become sexual with myself when I get home.
Everybody has something in San Diego. I'm lucky I got trick.
Okay. Yeah. So you took care of that, Janet?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And
that was like almost a year ago.
Okay. And tell me what's happened with your last pap smear. What was going on with that made it abnormal? What did they tell you at Planned Parenthood?
It was 6 months ago. All they told me was that I had an infection. Something came up abnormal. Actually, the piece of paper said there was an infection.
Yeah.
The nurse told me, my RN told me that it was something that didn't look serious. It looked like an infection, and I had to go back for a repeat in 6 months, which is actually coming up now. I'm scheduled for August 6th.
Okay, so Janet, just again, I think you should see somebody soon, and specifically with the spotting, once an examination is performed, the answer should be pretty simple. It might be just what's happening on your cervix right now, whether it's an infection that's still going on, whether it's an abnormality that has gotten more serious with time. A gynecologist needs to take a look at it and let you know what they are looking at, and kind of go from there. But in general, once you get the pregnancy test out of the way, as soon as you can get into a gynecologist, the next step would be to take a look at your cervix.
Is the home pregnancy test as good as the one they give you the first time around in the office?
Yes,
now?
It's basically just as good. I mean, the home pregnancy test right now can detect the pregnancy even a day or two before you actually miss a period. It's pretty darn sensitive. So if you are about to come to your period but you feel that you are pregnant, your home pregnancy test can detect it right about at that time. You don't have to wait until you actually miss a period for most of these tests.
So they're more accurate than they were 10 years ago?
Absolutely.
All right. And I had a question. Let's put this down on our list of things to talk about, because I got some ovulation questions.
Okay.
And about what percentage of women do it at that, you know, I don't know, 13 days after their period or whatever the hell it is. Drew can never seem to figure that one out. Jacob?
Okay. Hey, what's up?
You're 19?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good, what's up?
Great, Jacob.
Basically, the story goes that, I don't know, say during my, you know, my, as Adam would say, my jack-off session, I actually used a Mach 3 shaver and stuck it up my butt.
No, you did not.
You're gay.
Listen, we've all put...
Anderson, how dare you?
No, we've all put twin blades in our asses, but no one would dare put three blades up their ass.
Not the shaving side, mind you, just the stick end.
Oh, well, that's different.
Yeah, that's totally different.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Right, and the thing is, I got off on that, and I'm kind of wondering, you know, the thing is, I'm totally hetero. Totally, you know, I got the Playboys, I got the porns and all that stuff. But I was just wondering.
That's all it takes. Go out and spend $10 on porn. You're straight now.
But, you know, like when I'm watching the pornos and they show like a big hairy ass, I got to turn away and I feel like vomiting and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
I, you know, like, I'm totally not into guys, but then I was just wondering, could there be like hints of homosexual tendencies?
No. No. I'm going to put you on hold because you're kind of an idiot. I'm scared you're going to talk. Well, I'm talking, which is my sort of general approach to the show.
I'm beginning to understand that.
But a lot of guys like a little butt action, or at least a handful of heterosexual guys like a little butt action. And a certain percentage of women enjoy that, too, heterosexual women. And so I'm guessing it might be about the same percentage. I mean, I never really thought about it, but if 5% of the female population enjoys a little play down there during the heterosexual act, I bet you about the same amount of men do it, and I don't think it makes them gay. It might even make them more heterosexual in a bizarre way, or at least just more sexual. Now, Jacob, I'm not so sure about, but I don't think that makes you gay. As a matter of fact, most of the gay guys we talk to end up just blowing guys. I don't know what the hell that's about. I don't know why you bother being gay if you're just going to blow guys. But that is what a large percentage of our gay callers say. Eric?
Hello?
You're 22?
Yeah. Hey, Adam, you are so funny. Oh, my God. You are the funniest guy in the history of TV and radio, man. Oh, my God. I watch you on The Man Show. I've been listening to you since I was, like, 16.
Uh-oh.
You are really super funny. Actually,
thank you.
My second time calling.
Great. What's your question there?
My first question, is that my girlfriend, she's got a, I think she, well, she says she has a general warts, and she said that she had a certain operation done, like it involved a laser beam or some kind of a laser.
Right.
And she said that once she got that done, they didn't come back, but then now that she's here in the U.S., about a week, 2 weeks after she arrived, she's gotten him back, so I don't know.
Where is she from?
She's actually from France.
Oh, yeah. And she picked him up now that she's been in the States for 2 weeks? She got him again?
No, I don't think so. I think this is just a second occurrence.
Yeah.
Because I picked her.
Yeah. Well, because warts, at least, and okay, there's something else to talk to Dr. Ben about. What about this wart virus? Does some burn themselves out, some stay around forever? Do we not really know?
All right, these are all good questions. Basically, warts are caused by the human papillomavirus. Most genital warts, while there are over 20 different subtypes of the human papillomavirus, most genital warts are caused by two specific subtypes, and that's 6 and 11. Regardless of that, those are the types that are less likely,
okay,
if anybody cares, about specifically causing cervical cancer, which for women is, as you can imagine, is a very big deal. That's why women get pap smears once a year.
So there's 20 varieties.
Yes, over 20, yeah.
And two are dangerous?
Well, actually, those two are safe. So
safe.
Those two are the ones that are most likely to be seen in external genital warts, the one that Eric is asking us about. And the other subtypes, there are subtypes 16, 18, 31, 35. These are subtypes that are much more likely, once they are in the vagina, to cause cervical changes that are much more dangerous. External genital warts in general have no real long-term kind of significance for people other than that they're there, and they can be transmitted sexually from one person to the next.
So the ones you can see are safer than the ones you can't see.
In general, that is exactly right.
And why do they go up? Why would they number 135 if it only goes to 20?
That's a good question,
what kind
Adam.
Of thinking is that?
That's a very good question.
You better start raising your hand at those meetings. So that, question number one, why do we name one of the warts number 35
right.
when we only go to 20?
They must have skipped. They must have just gone all over the map and maybe threw a dart at a dartboard. I have no idea why.
All right, we'll bring that up at the next vagina meeting.
That's good. I'll write that down.
Adam, a few years ago, you were going on a hunch a few years ago about how real skinny guys are really into like a chubby sort of fat girls. I know that you were going on a hunch on that.
Yes, more often. I you know what I think now? I think now you notice it.
Yeah.
So what I mean is when you see a fat girl and a really skinny guy,
yeah.
it really gets carved into your psyche. Like you go, oh my God, look at Ichabod over there with tons of fun. Right? But I don't think that they're with fat women more often. I think you know it when they are. It accentuates their skinniness.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a 150-pound guy and you're standing next to a 350-pound woman, you look like you're 110 pounds.
Yeah, maybe
and
not.
And she looks like she's 750 pounds. All right, don't worry about it, Eric. But she's got to take care of those warts.
Yeah, well, yeah. Eric, let me just finish this thought up as far as the genital warts are concerned. First of all, they're... are ways to get rid of the warts, but the virus most likely is always going to be in the vagina. So we don't have any good systemic therapy to get rid of the virus that's there. Every once in a while, she may have a wart. Sometimes people, after one treatment, for example, with the laser, may never get the warts again. Sometimes they come back. Regardless, once she's had warts, she may always give them to you.
And there's no way to test for that.
Actually, there's no way to test for that. Even if we found the human papillomavirus in her, which we know is there because she's had warts before, there's nothing much Eric can do about it other than wear condoms. And there's some indirect evidence that maybe spermicides, nanoxinol 9, for example, may also be virucidal, so that may add, you know, more protection.
See, this seems like... This seems like something you guys should get to work on, because so many people have this, and I hear Drew telling people night after night, look, you're just going to have to wear a condom.
Right.
And they're like, hey, I'm going to be with this chick for the rest of my life. I'll wear a condom for another 45 years? I mean, it almost sounds unrealistic, in which case he says that, well, you know, if you're going to get married, then go ahead and get them yourself. You're a guy. Who cares? It'll keep you from cheating. But, I mean... You know, if the person hasn't had an outbreak,
right.
let's say they had an outbreak and they had them burned off.
Right.
And 2 years goes by.
Correct.
With no outbreak.
Right.
And I know you can't put a number to this, but how safe is it not to wear the condom at that point?
You're actually just as infectious, most likely, when you have the genital warts out there for everybody to see and for a physician to take care of, as you are when you have not had them for 2 years and have had them burned off. In other words, the presence or absence of the virus externally by way of the warts does not necessarily mean that you're not infectious, even when you don't have the warts
out
there.
But some strains do burn themselves out, correct?
Well, the human body, just like it would fight off any infection, will try to mount an anti-infectious attack against the virus that's in the vagina at all times. Whether it's winning or not is influenced by several factors. One thing that, for example, Eric's girlfriend can do is decrease smoking. Smoking, for example, has been shown to allow the virus to continue to multiply. The carbon monoxide and some of the other chemicals that are in cigarette smoke actually show up in the cervix about a half hour after the first puff, and they are known to decrease the body's immune system and allow the virus to continue to divide. And it's also been shown that women, for example, who continue smoking actually have persistent genital warts in a much higher to a much higher degree than women, for example, who do not smoke.
I'll tell you, I can second that, because I once smoked a Virginia Slim through a hooker's vagina. I actually mounted her vagina like a bong. She put the cigarette in her mouth and lay down her back, and I saw it go down. I mean, I sucked that thing right out of her.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're a man of many talents. I thought it was just the man show, and here you are.
No.
There's so many things.
Smoke the hooker's vagina like a bong. Virginia
Slim. You're sickin'
me. You've come a long way, baby. Wow. Yeah. But listen, you guys, and I don't want to bust your chops too much here, but I do like all, you know, doctors to get to work, essentially, you know. There's this virus is present.
Yeah.
And it's always present.
That's right.
And you guys can't detect it?
Well, we can detect it. I, you know, for example, I can put a swab in the vagina, send it off for HPV testing, and I will not only know whether it's there or not, I will know what of the 20-plus subtypes it is.
Yeah, it could be number 35 of the 20-plus subtypes.
But as far as what that means, until somebody actually gets consequences of that, doesn't really matter.
But I understand, but you can, like I said, let's say our last caller's girlfriend's not a smoker, and she's got a good immune system going, and it's been some time since her last breakout. A year from now, you could check her and give her a clean bill of health.
I will be able to give her a clean bill of health based on her not having any genital warts that one can see and having a normal pap smear. And then she has essentially a clean bill of health, but it's probably safe to say that the virus is to some degree still in her vagina. And we do not yet have
what I'm talking. That's
any
the part you're
medication
dancing around.
That we can give her to get rid of that virus.
But you also said it wouldn't come up on her pap smear.
It won't necessarily come up on her pap smear. Many women have the virus, and they never have an abnormal pap and never have a wart.
That's what I'm saying. You need to be able to find it regardless of the abnormal pap.
Right.
And number two, what about my crotch-sniffing dogs?
What about? Do you have a crotch-sniffing dog?
I'm working on it.
Can detect HPV?
Listen, I've been crowing about this for 5 years, and one day, Da Vinci, I will be heralded as a savior and a sage. I have been saying for 5 years, dogs can smell a joint packed in coffee grounds and welded into a car fender on the Tijuana border.
Yeah.
I bet they could smell something that was going wrong down there. And then a few years later, I heard that they taught dogs to smell out skin cancer, which they can do now.
I think I heard that too, Adam.
Right.
You're onto
something. So if you got a dog that can sniff out skin cancer and can sniff out trace elements of gunpowder, of drugs, of contraband. I mean, they can teach them to sniff anything. It's not like they got a cocaine dog and a pot dog and a gunpowder dog. They teach a dog to sniff any dog to sniff anything. I've seen how they do it.
You're proposing a gyne dog.
Almost
like Air Bud, but on the
Air Bud 4, the gyne dog. That I would have watched on that crappy plane. Put the nose right up in there and would just see what's going on. No probing, no feeling, no embarrassing, giggling doctors with funny light-up party hats and big red noses and Groucho glasses standing in front of them with the big wax lips like you guys like to do.
Yeah.
Just the dignity of a dog sniffing their vagina and then reporting back to its trainer as to what's going on down there. I'm telling you, they're going to do this. A dog could sniff what in that area more than any other area in the human body. When things go, anything that goes south has its own funk to it. And we may not be able to smell it, but if a dog could smell weed packed in coffee grounds, a dog could pick up an abnormal cancer cell growing down there or some yeast or anything. They could do it. Start doing this. Spearhead this.
Yeah. You know what? They called Edison a lunatic, so this you might be onto something.
I'm telling you, within our lifetime, they will be using dogs for this. They're already using them to sniff out skin cancer. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dr. Ben, filling in for Dr. Drew, doing a great job.
Thank you.
Drew, if you're listening, don't bother coming back. We had an ass full of you, and Dr. Ben, he's better his first day than you were after year number 15. So, really, don't bother coming back. We're talking about talking about gynecology tonight and anything else you may want to discuss.
Hey, it's Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That is Dr. Ben. Filled in for Dr. Drew. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. Dr. Ben is a OBGYN, and he knows his way around the female parts. So that's what we're going to focus on tonight. Although he's a doctor, and I'm sure if you had a question that wasn't too crazy, he could answer any of those. Hell, I could. I've been sitting here long enough.
All right.
Smarter than that Drew is. I'll tell you that right now. Dave?
Dave's sleeping.
Caller Dave?
You. How you doing?
You're 21. What's up?
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Adam, I'd just like to say you're, like, the funniest person on the planet.
Well, thanks.
I'm a big fan.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
anyway, my problem is that I'm a virgin, and I've had a couple opportunities to have sex, but every time I'm about to ready to do the deed, I lose my erection. And I know it's not physiological because it's, like, hard as a rock until that point. But then once I know the opportunity is there, I kind of have a mental block, I think. And I want to know what could be causing this, how can I keep it from happening again, and is it normal?
Mm-hmm. Is this the reason why you're virgin at 21?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of opportunities to to change that, but unfortunately I haven't been able to do the job in either one.
Yeah, and so you get a little, you get nervous, and after it happened for the first time, that's it. Now it's going to happen the second time.
Yeah.
And the 100th time. Well, I don't want to put a curse on you, but for at least 80 more times. It's really the curse of the human psyche is if something bad happened the first time out, the likelihood of it happening the second time out are about 1,000 times greater than they were even the first time out when it happened. And I don't know why you must torture yourself, but as it pertains to the penis, it always seems to work that way. Now, you masturbate, right?
Of course.
And you have no difficulties there.
Not at all.
So it's all psychological.
Yeah.
But have you ever been in a relationship? I mean, have you ever been with one person for a while?
I've never had any relationship last more than like a month. I mean, I don't really do too well with the ladies, I suppose you could say. But
yeah, okay.
I have my hair of a share of hookups, but I never...
Oh, he said hookups.
Yeah, he said hookups.
Yeah, I thought he said F-ups.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he said hookers.
Wait a minute. Did you say hookups?
I said hookups. I didn't say hookers.
Right. Ben thought you said hookers. I thought you said F-ups. So, boy, we can really twist that.
Is it the equipment here at Westwood One, or is it...
No, I think it's Dave's equipment that's failing us. All right, Dave.
Yeah.
What you need is you need to find yourself a relationship and work it out.
Right.
Someone you don't have to be in love, but you have to get comfortable with this person.
Yeah.
You have to, I talk about this. I haven't spoken about it to Dr. Ben, but as guys, we all have that one girl who it's that break-in girl. She breaks us in. For some guys, most guys, it happens at 17 or 18. But some guys, myself included, didn't happen until 21, 22. It's that first girl you try all the different positions with, you take a shower with, you walk around naked with, you fart in front of, you get comfortable with. And if you just go from hookup to hookup to hookup, you'll never break through that ceiling. Your penis will fail you, and then you'll move on to the next uncomfortable, drunken experience. You need to have that girl where if your penis doesn't work, there's going to be a second date.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what he needs to find. And he can't focus on the penis so much because the more time he thinks about it, the worse it's going to do. Just get in a relationship. Find some other girl who's, you know, not been around the block too many times, who's a little naive herself. You guys enjoy each other, get to know each other. And then, God willing, you bang the bejesus out of her with that honking rod of yours.
Good advice, Adam.
Right?
Yeah, I think you're...
Yeah, guys need that. Right women don't need that. I mean, it's not bad for them, but they don't really need it. A woman could have a series of sexual experiences and not F up too much. She may not enjoy them quite as much as a guy who she's really worked things out with, but guys cannot perform sexually until they've worked out a little bit. You know what I mean? I mean, here's what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
And agree with me or I'll throw your ass off the show.
Okay, let's see if I can. But go ahead.
If a guy is with 100 different women, but one time only, he ain't going to work it out as well as if he was with one woman 100 times. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think in general I see what you're saying.
I'm saying that if you go from hookup to hookup to hookup, you never get a chance to work it out as a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the nerves are going, you're not comfortable, you're trying to figure out, you're spending all your energy trying to figure out your partner.
Yeah.
You're drunk.
Yeah, that's
It ain't going to work out. If you stay, you could do, all right, forget about 100, let's say 10. You do 10 different women all one time, you ain't going to be much better at the end of the 10th.
Yeah.
You'll be more experienced, but you'll not be much better. You do one woman 10 times at the end of the 10th session, you'll be good.
Gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. That's what Dave needs to do.
Right.
Okay. You're agreeing with me,
I'm
right?
agreeing with you 100%.
All right. You can stay to the next break.
Thank you.
Kim?
Yep.
You're 31. What's up?
Well, I have a question. I was with my boyfriend before for 10 years, and he never touched the G-spot, whatever, so I never knew how it felt. And now I have a new boyfriend who's even smaller, and I finally felt it, and I told him that I never felt it before and whatever, and he's like, well, was your last boyfriend a lot smaller? And I was thinking, no, he was bigger, but how come I would never feel it with the bigger one, but I will with the smaller guy?
Well, I didn't even know you were supposed to reach that with your penis.
Well, ideally, that may indeed happen. I mean, the G-spot is essentially been described as the area just internal to the urethral junction with the bladder, which can be reached vaginally. So it all depends on where Kim's G-spot is and the size of her boyfriend, but that may indeed be it. Also, I mean, there's the whole emotional aspect of, you know, orgasm and intercourse and, you know, what was going on with the last boyfriend for 10 years that all of a sudden, you know, is different with this new boyfriend. Maybe there's a better emotional connection and that has something to do with orgasms, but Kim may be onto something with the size difference.
I thought the G-spot was in and up.
It's in and internal to the junction of the tube that leads out of the bladder and the bladder itself. And it's about 2 to 3 centimeters.
Oh, centimeters.
2 to 3, about a finger breadth away from that particular junction. That's when, that's classically how
it's
been described. First
off, nobody knows how far a centimeter is. And,
about an inch.
Really?
Yeah, so it's about an inch.
Were there 10 millimeters in a centimeter?
That's right.
Well,
and there's 2.5 centimeters in an inch. So it's an inch up. Or, you know, if you look at the width of your finger, that's about an inch.
It's a little more than 2.5, but just points up.
Okay.
It just so happened, the location, he just happened to hit it, and the other guy that was bigger just...
The size difference could have been the issue. There is, you know, the emotional component, Kim, that you know, may know more about as far as what's happening in this relationship that wasn't happening in the last one.
Well, Kim, how did you answer the, no, your penis is smaller?
He just said, was your last boyfriend have a smaller one? I said, no, he didn't.
But his is small, right?
His is smaller, yeah.
Yeah. Is a guy with a small penis, I would just steer clear of the whole penis size discussion in general with my lady.
Oh, it's not that small. I mean,
all right.
You
okay.
Got the boot by now.
All right. Well, hey, Kim.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a couple questions, because my spidey sense is tingling. You, what's up with you? Something going on?
Like what?
Well, I mean, you sound like kind of a hard ass when it comes to guys. Like, you know, you made the comment that if he was too small, you would have given him the boot by now. I know you're kidding, but...
No, I'm not. I had a boyfriend before who was very small, and I couldn't be with him.
Right.
Wow. It wasn't happening.
What's up with the emotional side of the relationship?
That I'm in right now?
Just in general. Where's your dad?
He's married to another lady.
Uh-huh.
Not my mom.
When did he cut out?
When I was a baby.
Uh-huh. Did he abandon you?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Well, did he stay in touch with you?
No, I wouldn't say that either.
Well, it's one or the other, sweetie. I mean, I'm not talking about Ty Rocky and throwing you in the river, but I'm talking about he cut out on you.
Yeah, I guess he did.
He dumped on you and your mom, right?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
All right, now you don't completely trust men.
No.
So when you talk about sex, it's all physical, but you never really talk about the emotional side.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Right, so it's all about what size his penis is.
No.
Well, like, I'm having an orgasm because this guy's penis is reaching a certain part of my vagina.
Well, I didn't have an orgasm.
All right. You didn't?
Nope.
No. You don't have that with guys?
I do with my last boyfriend, not with this guy. I don't feel comfortable yet to go there.
You got any kids?
Yeah, I do.
How many?
Two.
All right. Where's his dad? Where are their dads?
We're separated.
All right. Do they see the kids?
Yeah. Yeah, one lives with him, one lives with me.
Yeah. That seems good and unhealthy. All right. No more kids, Mama. Using birth control?
Yeah, definitely.
What are you using?
I use ortho tricyclin.
Good. Stay on that. And remember, this guy isn't your daddy.
No.
Okay, but I don't trust him anyway.
Why not?
Because you picked him, that's why not.
Thanks a lot.
What's he do for a living?
He works on cars. Like, and you know what, too? He tells me, I'm not trying to be a boyfriend. I'm not trying to be your kid's dad. And like, you know what? I think I'm going to give him the boot.
Yeah, this guy may not be a keeper. But listen, you may not be open to the guy who is a keeper. Next time you see a guy and you're not attracted to him, I want you to stick with him.
No, he has to be cute. I have to have a good-looking one.
All right, Mama.
Thank you.
All right, no more kids.
Okay.
I don't I really got a strong vibe of her that her, she had some
that
male.
That was a very good pickup.
Male issues going
good
on
job,
over there.
Adam.
Sarah, yes, thank you. Sarah, you're 14.
Hi. I got on the pill in January and I got more acne and I gained a little more weight. But I was depressed before that because my grandma died, and it went away, but a lot more stuff started happening to me, but it still stopped. And in May, after my friend died, I got off the pill and to see how my periods would go while I was off it, and my acne went away, and I lost weight, but I got even more depressed. I was wondering if that could be because of the pill.
What'd you get on the pill for in the first place?
Yeah.
Well, because my periods were off and I was in a sexually active relationship.
Okay. I love that answer.
Well, what pill were you on, Sarah?
Orthotricycline.
Okay, so orthotricycline is the first pill that has FDA approval for the indication of acne. But to be honest, all birth control pills kind of function in the same way as far as making acne better.
But this made it worse, right?
So what normally happens is that it takes 3 months for the changes that the pill brings on to actually take hold. In other words, you know, the pill works, one of the important ways that the pill works is it decreases testosterone in women. And the final effect of that is also making acne better. But that takes some time. It's not an immediate effect. And for some women, even on orthotricycline, the progesterone component, which is actually a testosterone-like hormone in the pill, for some people, it can actually make acne worse before it gets better. And that might be an indication after 3 months, if things don't get better, to switch to another pill. And there's plenty of them out there. There's over 100 different kinds of birth control pills on the market.
Really?
So if one specifically, orthotricycline, didn't work, it's not the end of the world. There's other pills out there. And especially because you're sexually active, that's something that you should consider looking into. Don't just give up on the pill. It's a very effective way to have birth control. And you should definitely kind of pursue it. There's other options out there for you.
Are you currently sexually active, Sarah?
No.
No. And who died besides your grandma?
One of my closest friends.
What happened?
Well, she went into the hospital because they thought she had appendicitis, so they went in for exploratory surgery. She had a tumorous mass around her intestines, large and small, so they took some of those off. And they gave her an antibiotic and hopped her up on morphine, and she had liver failure and lack of oxygen to the brain. And we're still not sure exactly what the problem was with her, but they took her up to Stanford, and by the time she got up there, she was pronounced brain dead.
Wow.
And the next day she died.
Very sad for you.
That's awful.
All right, Sarah.
So, Sarah,
what?
Would the shot be any better?
The shot actually is, the shot that you're describing is most likely the Depo-Provera shot. Depo-Provera is a progestin-only injectable, and as I just mentioned, progestins in general are closer to testosterone than estrogen is, and actually one of the things that we see happening on the Depo-Provera shot is that people get worsening of their acne. So as far as the acne situation, it's not going to make things better. You need a combined contraceptive that, preferably an oral contraceptive that would have estrogen in it. And if the orthotricycline didn't work for you, I would try something else.
There's 100 different kinds of birth control pills?
There are hundreds, and there's actually some more coming out in the next 2 to 3 years that are going to be really interesting in you. So we're only going to have more choices as far as birth control pills in the upcoming future.
Are they going to be in different new shapes, or are they going to work differently?
Well, let me tell you about three different options that you'll probably hear about pretty soon anyway.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm going to have to take a break before
okay.
I hear this.
All right.
We're running a little bit late.
Okay.
But I do want to know about this,
okay.
And I want to know, and don't tell me the answer yet.
All right.
But live, the answer is no. Which is, are they going to come out with a pill that you can take, you know, once a year? Or that you can take once a month? Or that, you know, once a week even, that you don't have to take?
You're getting there. I'm telling you.
Okay.
You first, you got me going with that dino dog. And now you are definitely on your way to being a gynecologist. We're on to something here.
I'm telling you, the gyno dog will will come to pass is standard medical practices in our lifetime.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Okay.
Oh yeah. The parts for you ladies, and we were going to talk about the new birth control,
right,
and what's looming in the future for women and birth control and men for birth control. So
okay.
What are the breakthroughs and when are they breaking through?
Okay, so let me just tell you about three relatively new types of birth control that have come out this year. One, I was just jotting these down as I'm remembering some of the stuff that's coming up, that's come out lately. And one is a new IUD called the Mirena, which is a progesterone-only IUD. It slowly releases progesterone into the uterus. It causes a thickening of the cervical lining, and basically it's good for 5 years. The nice little added benefit of that particular IUD is that it makes women have a lot less bleeding during their periods, and at least 20% will just stop having periods.
And that is just inserted by gynecologists and left in there for 5 years.
That's correct. With an annual checkup.
And as effective as the pill?
It's actually more effective than the pill, and I'll tell you why. It's because IUDs, because they are constantly there and do not depend on human error as far as taking a pill every day, and do not get side effects like, you know, some women who take massive doses of antibiotics make the pill less effective and can get pregnant, quote-unquote, on the pill, and therefore it's more effective.
But when the pill is taken as prescribed,
yep,
it's as effective.
It's pretty darn effective. It's over 99% effective.
And who can't take this? Who wouldn't be a good candidate for the new IUD?
Well, for example, people who have had really bad bleeding without being diagnosed as to what the cause of the bleeding, big bad fibroids that will interfere with the placement of the IUD, things of this nature. And in general, before putting an IUD in anyone, you in general want them to have had at least one child before. They do not need to be at high risk for getting sexually transmitted diseases like gonorrhea and chlamydia. So there is some screening there. Not everybody is a good candidate for an IUD, and it's definitely for long-term contraception. You're talking about somebody who's going to have 5 years of contraception on board. So.
But it can be taken out, right?
Absolutely. It can be taken out, but, you know, because it is expensive and there are other ways to go as far as reversible contraception, that's something that, in general, people choose who are really in it for the long haul.
How much is it?
It's about $350. Just that's our cost. And, you know, whatever the gynecologist is going to charge to insert it. So it's probably going to run people about $500.
I see. But over the long haul, when you talk about the
money, if you're doing it
for
5 years, yep, that's
all right.
Pretty cost effective.
What's next?
The other one is the Lunel. Lunel is an injectable contraceptive, and instead of the other injectable contraceptive that's available right now, the Depo-Provera that I heard you and Dr. Drew have been discussing, that injectable had some problems with it.
Basically,
once a woman decided she didn't want to be on that particular birth control, it could sometimes take upwards of 9 months before she'd get her periods anywhere near normal. In other words, for people who wanted to basically quit that and try to have a baby, it was very difficult because it would take a while to get out of their system. Well, the Lunel is a monthly injectable. And once a woman decides to get off that particular injection, instead of going through the 9 to sometime 18-month period of time before she could get pregnant, in general, menstrual function returns within 2 to 3 months of the last injection, so it becomes much easier to resume.
Who does the injection?
Well, in general, people who do not remember to take a pill every day, who've had problems with that, and still want a hormonal contraceptive, that would be perfect. You get a shot once a month, and you're protected for the next 30 days.
I'm asking who physically does it. Does your gynecologist do it?
Oh, yes. You do have to go to a gynecologist, and that can be a pain. I mean, obviously, it's much easier to get a prescription for a pack of pills and not have to see your gynecologist for 6 months to a year. But this does require for you to go to a health care professional and get the injection.
And anything else?
Yeah, there's one more. There's actually, and I'm surprised that more patients don't call the office and actually ask for this one, because if there's one thing that some of my younger patients are very, very concerned with is acne and weight gain on the pill. And this is a new birth control pill that has put itself up as the one that will cause you the least weight gain possible. Its name is Yasmin, and specifically it contains a new progesterone, which is purported to cause less weight gain than any of the other progesterones. But in clinical studies, that weight gain, that amount of weight that may be saved, maybe 1 to 2 pounds for women who gain weight on the pill.
Maybe
a 1 to 2 pound difference.
Still make your cans bigger?
It still makes your cancer.
Really?
It has estrogen, so yes, it will do
so
that.
So that weight gain is a different kind of weight gain.
Yeah, it's water retention generally. That's what the progesterone will do to you. But so this is a different progesterone.
The breast enlargement, that has nothing to do with that.
That's not considered part of it. That's right.
Sounds delightful.
Give me the pill, Skipper.
We got to take ourselves another quick break, and then we'll come back for a nice long marathon session of you and your calls.
Right on.
Corolla, that is Dr. Ben over there, who's filling in for Dr. Drew.
Hello.
Dr. Ben is an OBGYN, so he knows all about the female parts and the birth control and the birthing process and STDs and all that stuff. He is an expert. So tonight we'll be steering the show toward those questions, although we will be taking some your more standard fare love line questions as well. Tony?
Yes, how you doing, sir?
Good. 22. What's up?
I want to say hello, Adam, Dr. Ben. I'm a big-time fan of The Man Show, also WNEW. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
My situation is this, okay? I'm 22. My girlfriend is 20. We've been going out for a year now. She's a virgin. I'm not. I lost my virgin at 18. Okay? This is my first time dealing with a virgin, okay? But she wants to lose it, everything else. She came forward with me. She sat and told me about it, everything else. And I just don't know how to approach this. This is my first time sitting to with a virgin.
All right. Does she still have a hymen? And what percentage, and maybe you don't know this, but roughly what percentage of 20-year-old virgins have a hymen?
I'd be honest with you, I couldn't tell. Maybe about 75-80%.
75-80?
Yeah, my
all
guess.
Right. Let me. And what do you do for a living, Tony?
I'm an architect designer.
A designer. Yeah. All right. Well, we have a gynecologist here, so I'll pose the same question to him.
All right.
That I posed to him 10 minutes ago, Ben.
Well, basically, you know, that's kind of a tough one, but I'd say probably, you know, overwhelmingly, the cases where women have an imperforate hymen or have a really tight hymenal ring, that doesn't happen all that frequently. Probably about, you know, 80% of women will have a perforated hymen that should not really, you know.
Virgin or not?
Virgin. I mean, I'm talking about the first time around.
Right.
And first of all, I just wanted to commend Tony. That's, you know, he's really, you know, he's in a, sounds like a good relationship and really open and communicative one. And for this kind of call to be able to, you know, go about it and take his time, I think that's a really, really good way to approach it. And essentially for Tony and for his girlfriend.
And his buddies bet him $250 he couldn't bang a virgin, too. So there's that.
Well, I think as far as what to do, Tony, I just, you know, go real slow. The first time is probably going to hurt for her. And,
now, why is it going to hurt for her if she doesn't have a hymen?
Well,
and are you saying that there's...
She has a hymen.
A hymen that...
A hymenal ring. So she has an area that is basically differentiating the external part of her from the vagina. So once that's penetrated, that will hurt, especially for the first time inserting something.
So
you know,
she will have
pain.
That.
She will have pain. But, you know, there's the difference that I'm making is between a perforated hymen and a non-perforated hymen.
All right, so let me just make sure we're on the same page.
So what's the difference between that?
Good question. So a hymen basically starts off embryologically as a really thin membrane that... for, as I said, at least 80% of women is going to form a hole in it. That membrane is going to break down by the time, you know, a woman is 14, 15, 16 years old. And when she has a period, all the blood that's created internally from the uterus is going to find its way outside. So the hymen will be open to the point where at least blood can come out. So it will have a perforation in it. And overwhelmingly, will be big enough, that perforation, where having intercourse, you, on your end, Tony, really are not going to feel a big difference other than it may be a little tight for you. On her end, it's going to hurt because that hymen, that whatever's left of the hymen, the ring, the hymenal ring as we refer to it, that's still left from where that membrane used to be, is most likely going to some degree, rip and tear to a degree where she's going to have a lot of discomfort associated with
it. And what happens to it after that? Does it slough off?
No, I mean, it's the hymenal ring, you can always see it. It's a small little ridge that's to some degree always there, and you can kind of, you know, you can always kind of see it. It's just that, you know, with intercourse, that ring gets stretched out a little bit, that, you know, there are areas, corners of it that may tear and allow for, you know, an object like a penis to fit through without pain after several times.
Some days
it's usually not days. The one thing that you may hear about, Tony, from her is that she had a little bit of bleeding after the first time, and that, you know, at insertion, it was painful. And for many women, that first time around, it's more pain and anxiety than, you know, enjoying the moment. So just go really slow and make sure that as far as foreplay is concerned, that she's well lubricated. And
what about adding some lubrication?
You can do that if she's really nervous. If she's not lubricated well enough on her own, then that's something that Tony can think about doing. Yes, those are all very good points.
And is there any, you know, that to come out with? A lubricant, it's got a little numbing agent in it, you know, called like my first lubricant or something like that. We do it in a cute bottle, maybe put the Flintstone characters on the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
But something that just sort of softened that first blow just a little bit. I mean, maybe you should just, whether she's lubricating or not, maybe he ought to just get some lube going as a first.
I don't think that's a bad idea. Yeah, she will be nervous, but, you know, depending on how and how much they've done to this point, you know, they may have already gone a certain way, a certain distance.
Well, let's find out. Tony?
That might be helpful.
Why is she a virgin at 20?
I guess would be old-fashioned parents.
All right.
Very strict old-fashioned parents.
Okay, it's not because she's freaked out about sex?
No.
Okay, that's good, because that'll cause a little tightening of the hymenal ring right there. It'll zip shut like a duffel bag. All right there, Tony. Good luck.
I'd like to give a man a salute. Ziggy, oi.
Thanks, Tony.
Good night, guys.
Hey, take care
of
yourself. Tony's drunk. She got herself a nice drunken guy named Tony to deflower her. That's wonderful. All right, let's keep moving and speak to Sarah, who's 35. Sarah?
Hi. My problem is, well, it's initially not a problem. I am capable of having several orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
And...
You're lucky.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's more like two. The first one is about 10 seconds, and then the second one can last like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But then the problem is that sometimes, very suddenly, like out of the blue, I'll get just a mind-boggling headache. And then, of course, my orgasm stops, but that's not... The only problem is that then this person who has been such a trooper,
mm-hmm.
Now I have a headache and don't feel like having sex.
Right. Now, is this a one-sided headache? Is it towards the front of the head? Describe the headache to me. Do you ever go blind after a headache? Just describe to me the severity of the headache. Is this the worst headache you've ever had?
Yeah, like I could start to cry.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. And is it on one side or the other, or does it seem to be all over?
It seems all over, but it seems to focus on the front of my head, like mm-hmm. my forehead.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any other sensations at the time? Do you feel like throwing up? Do you have any kind of visual defects where you can't see something in front of you? What else happens?
I don't feel nauseated, and I don't...
How long does it take the headache to go away?
A long time, like 10 minutes.
Okay, there's just a couple of things. You know, as far as physiologically what's happening to you during an orgasm is, you know, their blood pressure changes, blood pressure goes up, dopamine is released, endorphins are released. These all can have changes on what's happening on the vessels that supply blood to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically for people who have aneurysms, that could be a big-time problem. Especially when you're describing a headache that is an extremely severe headache, that's something that if blood pressure really goes up in you, that could be an early sign of an aneurysm, which could be a real bad medical emergency if it starts to leak.
What is an aneurysm exactly?
An aneurysm is a weakening of the blood wall of the vessel. So instead of having, just imagine, you know how in those cartoons you see a big hose getting turned on and somebody stepping on the hose, and then the part that's a little closer to the spigot from the place that the person steps on starts to get larger and larger and larger until it blows up. That's what an aneurysm can do. It's a weakening. It's an area that's weakened, and if blood pressure goes up inside that area, it can explode. And one of the first symptoms are excruciating headaches. Yeah. So I think it's kind of important that, just as, you know, a precautionary measure, there's nothing wrong with having multiple orgasms, but having, you know, multiple orgasms that lead to a stroke could be a really bad scenario, and it would be a good idea to see a neurologist who are basically also headache experts and can talk to you about this issue.
And you can have an aneurysm anywhere in your body,
That's
right?
true. Any blood vessel can form an aneurysm, but, you know, the big ones that we're afraid of are aneurysms in the abdominal aorta, that, you know, basically there's so much blood flowing through there that if a person can exsanguinate and die once those rupture within, you know, seconds. And obviously ones that are in places like the brain that can get compressed and have, you know, long-term neurologic deficits and death, that those would be the two places you don't want to have a leaking aneurysm,
Right. And when you have the internal one,
abdominal one, right.
What do you, what's the sensation with that? Is there a sensation? I mean, you wouldn't feel that one coming, would you?
No. The classic finding is a pulsating abdominal mass on physical exam. That before that thing blows, it gets big enough where somebody can put a hand on you and actually feel a pulsating mass, and that's how some of these are picked up. Some of these are picked up by, you know, CAT scans done for other abdominal problems and are seen by, you know, a CAT scan. But, yeah, you're right. A lot of these are asymptomatic, and one never knows until one is found, you know, dead. Apparently, just
as an
aside.
Well, but then you know, right?
And then you know.
That's
because
the
person is dead.
All right.
Lincoln, Lincoln was purported to have an abdominal aortic aneurysm. Lincoln had what's thought to be Marfan syndrome, which predisposed him to several conditions, like one of which was having an abdominal aortic aneurysm. And according to some, you can see this based on some of the photographs taken of Lincoln, the legs are always moving. The abdominal aorta was pulsating so badly that he couldn't keep his feet straight when he was sitting for some of his photos, and those are always kind of
blurry.
And so that's one argument. Apparently, he was very close to dying of an abdominal aneurysm. He would have died shortly after he was, you know, assassinated anyway. So
really?
Apparently that's one theory.
Let me tell you, for me, that drops it down to manslaughter. You know what I mean?
To what?
Manslaughter.
Manslaughter.
I mean, for John Wilkes Booth.
Right.
I mean, you shoot a guy who would have died within 6 months, manslaughter. I mean, I really wouldn't mind that factored into a murder trial. You know what I mean? You run over a dog that had a couple months left.
Not
as bad as running over a puppy.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Factor that in.
The other interesting thing about Lincoln is that the people who first took care of him, the physicians, what they tried to do as far as working on that bullet is they used very blunt surgical probes, metal probes, to try to pull the bullet out, and apparently just shoved it deeper and deeper into his brain. So, you know, it just goes to show you where medicine has gone in the last several years.
Yeah. Medicine has really come a long way, although as far as Lincoln's dentist goes, exactly the same procedures as what was done on Lincoln's mouth 200 years ago. Absolutely. Absolutely. That one has not budged. Moccasin making has come further than dentistry in the last 150 years. And to be fair, saddle making as well. Josh?
Yes, hello.
You're 22.
Yes.
What's up?
My problem is I met this girl I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out a couple of times, you know, just, it's not like a date or anything. It was just more like a friend thing. And she knows that I like her. And ever since I told her that I was going to go home for the weekend, and then I came back, I gave her a call, we talked, I told her, I wrote her a letter, you know, and afterwards, after that day, it was just like, I never got a hold of her again, tried calling her, like, you know, a couple of times, and then
Yeah. Well, what did the letter say?
Well, I didn't read the letter to her yet. I wrote her a letter and it's not yet done. And I was going to reach her. I wanted to get it done. And
oh, you're going to write it and then read it to her.
Actually, I got it, you know, halfway through and I told her, you know, when I finish writing it, and I want to read to you. And afterward, I never heard from her anymore.
Come on, don't be such a pussy.
Drew, please. Yeah, even Drew in Italy knows that this ain't going to work out.
You can read the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh?
It ain't happening.
I know you're into this chick, and let me explain a concept to a lot of our young male listeners. It doesn't matter if you're into her a thousandfold. It still doesn't make her into you. Like, a lot of guys think, well, you don't understand. I really dig her, so she has to be into me to some degree. She's not into you that way. That's fine. Believe it or not, there are many women who aren't into me, Josh. I know you find that hard to understand or believe, but it is true. And you know what you got to do? You got to move on. You got to find someone who's into you who's probably less attractive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I just like to know if, you know, should I just give her a call and ask her, you know, why?
Well, why? How many times have you called her without her calling you back?
Like 3 times.
3 times. And what? And you left a message?
I left a message. Well, not to her directly, but like to her, one of her sister, telling, saying that, you know, to give me a call back soon as she can.
But she never did like you.
Hmm?
She never did like you like a boyfriend.
No, she never said that.
No. Listen, Josh, she's not into you, and she's doing the merciful thing, which is finally cutting it off. You're wasting a lot of your valuable 22-year-old dating time on a chick who ain't interested.
Right.
So stop obsessing. You're freaking her out. She feels that obsessive energy just like we do, and you're freaking her out. Find someone who likes you. All right? And listen to this, Josh. What are you doing with your life?
I'm just going to school right now.
Where are you going?
Just taking, like, you know, extra course in the
junior college.
Yes.
Okay. There you go, right there. You can't pick up chicks when you're in junior college.
Yeah.
That's high school with ashtrays. You understand? You need to get your life in order, work hard on your life, and then you'll meet chicks. Don't worry about trying to talk this one into love who ain't into it, okay?
Right.
All right, you focus on your school, you transfer to a real school, and then you move on, you make some money. Please, who are we kidding with these junior colleges? When I'm in charge, I will turn them all into prisons. And here's the good news about junior college. I'm going to leave a lot of people that are currently in them. I will now involve them into the penal system. Because I know it's about 80% criminal element. At least non-taxpayers. People trying to suck off off Uncle Sam's teeth.
Right.
Going over there, wasting all our tax money with their nonsense.
Wow.
Playing softball and taking English as a second language. Please, I'm going to clean house. They already look like prisons, most of them. They're gray, an avocado, flat roofs, not a lot of windows. The windows have that nice screen on them so you can't escape.
Right.
And there's a good high 8-foot fence around them. All I need to do is build a couple of guard towers and shut down the snack shack. And
right.
It becomes a prison at that point.
Barbed wire wouldn't hurt, but yeah, you're onto something.
Right. And then what I'm going to do is here's what I'm going to do with these junior colleges. I'm going to put up the guard tower. I'll put the barbed wire on top of the 8-foot fence.
Yeah.
Get rid of the snack shack, and then I'm going to circulate a flyer that says all fifth semester students, anyone who's been here longer than 2.5 years, you get a free hash pipe on Wednesday the 29th. No one else need attend. Those people walk in, I shut the gate, and that's it. I sort them out later.
Right.
It may take them years to be processed and actually get out. And yes, a few innocent people will be left. We'll auction their cars off that are in the parking lot for more revenue so I can convert more junior colleges into prisons. I could clean up this country in just a few short months. Brian?
That sounds almost Hitlerish.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
See Kyle, brother.
What's up?
Hey, Brian. Well, my girlfriend, when we get down to go have sex, like, she takes off her underwear, and I swear to God, it smells, like, real bad in the room.
Mm-hmm.
She's visited a gynecologist, and he said it was just a yeast infection, and she got, like, creams, but it didn't do nothing.
Brian, yeast normally does not smell bad.
Interesting.
The classic foul-smelling discharge diagnosis is something called bacterial vaginosis, which, interestingly enough, is the most common cause of discharge in sexually active females, and basically that is something that might have been missed, or it could really just be her body odor. It's hard for me to say, but at the same time, I think this warrants another quick trip to the gynecologist. And what the gynecologist can do, see, a lot of gynecologists will initiate that workup by looking under the microscope. What may be helpful to this particular gynecologist or in this particular case is to actually take cultures. Those take a couple of days to come back. You may not have the answer for her right away, but if there is, you know, a distinct big-time shift in the normal bacterial flora of the vagina, that will be something that a culture will be able to differentiate from just looking for yeast on a slide. That might take a couple of days longer, but it might actually help definitively solve the problem.
But, sir?
Yeah.
The biggest problem, like, it seems like I notice it more when I go down on her.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's not really a, I don't know, I was just wondering, could it be maybe because...
I knew it. Shut your ass down.
There had to be one. That was, I know, but that was our first one.
Brian, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, you didn't get it out. I yelled over it. I knew it was coming. But just to go back and not many hosts have the guts to go back and repeat what they shouted over only seconds ago. Her butthole was the size of a mason jar, and anyone who listens to this show knows that from time to time we get some callers calling up, and they work that into the story.
That's
I enjoy that. I don't mind that.
Is that something that keeps popping up? The size of a mason jar?
Yes, it will. It will come up from time to time, and basically, what happens is it used to be one guy who did it out of Tucson. Who I actually had the pleasure of meeting when I was in Tucson doing some sort of something that I would never do in a million years now, ever again. But I was out there, and this guy came up, and he was perfect. I love these guys. You know the guys who wear the hockey jersey in the dead of summer?
Sure.
And they're 6'2", but they're really 5'9", because they walk. They almost look like a turtle from a profile, and they really have no social life. Well, he came up, and that was the guy who started it all some years ago. And I think the rest have been copycat callers.
Right.
But listen, I appreciate it. And I was starting to sniff it out. And let me just give you guys a hint, and we're going to call the show and get into the a-hole the size of a mason jar line.
Wow.
Here's where my spidey sense started tingling when he said, well, but listen, because you know what I do.
That's
you see, when they
when
go,
you
know, that's
it.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's a cadence or a word selection, but when they just start getting into one more thing, here's what I do, or here's what she had, it always comes, it always follows that.
Good, good. Well, I'm learning.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't mind the prank calls on this show at all. I have no problem with that. Never did. Ben?
Yeah.
You're 23?
Yep.
What's up?
Hey, my girlfriend gets urinary tract infection, and she got one the other day, or it was probably about 3 days ago, and it went away, and she went to the doctor, and they gave her antibiotics and all that crap, and then it went away, and then it came back 2 days ago, and she just hates it, and she wants to know why she keeps getting it.
Well, urinary tract infections in women are much more common than men simply because the tube that leads out of the bladder is much shorter in women, and it's easier to get bacteria to go up through the urethra and into the bladder. So essentially, the biggest risk factor for women as far as getting urinary tract infections is having intercourse.
We haven't had sex in about a week, 4 days, 5 days.
Okay. Now, it takes some time for the bacteria to start to divide and to actually manifest themselves as a bladder infection, where she might have burning when she urinates, goes to the bathroom every 5 minutes. The other thing that may have happened is that initial set of antibiotics that she was treated with may not have been adequate, or she did not take it for the required amount of time to completely get rid of the bladder infection. So it might not be a new bladder infection or that she gets the same one over and over again. It's just that she never quite treats herself appropriately.
Hey, Ben?
Yeah.
Caller Ben, do you think she's cheating or something?
No.
All right.
It doesn't have to be that.
All right.
Okay.
Just checking. Well, there you go, baby.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Hey, good times, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
One more thing, Ben, just for you to advise her is that, in general, one of the ways that you can counteract all this is have her...
Anal.
No.
Is that... That's what he's telling me during the break.
That is not what I was telling
you. Well, it would. Ever. It would work, though. Okay. Would it not?
Okay, I won't touch
work.
That. But anyway, what I'm talking about is that essentially if she was able to get up, go to the bathroom, empty her bladder, instead of going straight to sleep, for example, that would help. So
because basically, you have sex, you push whatever you don't want back up there, the bacteria up there, because it's such a short run with women. And if you go to the bathroom after that, you can flush it out, theoretically.
That's right. That's true. And some women who, even in spite of doing that, do not are still getting recurrent infections, we actually give them an antibiotic to take after they have sex. So they go to the bathroom, take a pill, and that's another way to deal with it. But in general, just peeing is going to be mostly what you can do.
Yeah. It's been put into us by the Almighty to have to take a whiz after sex for guys.
Yeah.
I mean, most guys have to urinate after sex, right?
Yeah.
Usually because they drank a 12-pack and are looking for just a little break. And also they got to do that nude pose down in front of the bathroom mirror. That's what I do. But do women have to have urination? Do they have to urinate after sex? Do they have that sensation, most women?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Interesting that you don't know that.
But I don't know that.
You should really look into that. But as a guy, you could say as a rule, guys do have to have the sensation.
Yes.
And I would guess that's put into us, right? For a reason?
Could be a reason. You know, I mean, if you have semen that's in the urethra still, that's a potential cause for infection. I mean, bacteria love to munch on that. And if you can clear that by peeing, that's
a good thing. Well, I'm assuming that most things your body does... involuntarily, and I don't mean involuntarily, I mean you urinate voluntarily, but most of the feelings and urges you have are sort of there as a way to protect you in a way, and I'm guessing that's what urination is, and I would assume that women got to do that. And
can we take a survey out there?
After sex, you got to urinate, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of thumbs up in the room. Yeah, I guess
good.
That'll work.
Same as guys. All right, so ladies, you do that. We'll take a break,
okay,
and we'll be back. Hey, everybody. Loveline. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben is an OGBYN, and I know I...
That's okay.
I screwed that up a little, but he is a gynecologist, and he knows everything that's going on between the legs. And Dr. Drew, he knows what's going on between the ears, but Ben, he focuses on the knees. So we are taking those kinds of calls tonight, but he's also a doctor. And if you have medical questions, he can address those. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. And
I wanted
I was
hoping, Adam, before the end of the show, just because we talked, I think especially, you know, because contraception is so important for so many listeners, I just wanted to mention some of the things that that are coming fairly soon. We've talked about some of the new stuff that's available now.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff that I think is really new that's coming in over the next 2 or 3 years. And the first one is, remember Norplant?
Sure.
Okay. I've heard you talk about Norplant before. And Norplant has really lost a lot of its luster, you know? When it came out, everybody thought it was going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then a couple of things happened. First of all, some of the people who had it put in wanted it out. It was approved for 5 years of use, and you had to go in, and these are six subcutaneous little matchsticks, if you will, that contain progesterone. And when it's time to remove them 3, 4, 5 years down the road, when we got in there to try to take those out, some of those things were locked in there like cement, and it would take you sometimes 10 or 15 minutes to remove one, and you had six to go, or you had five to go. There were total
because
six.
Because tissue grew around them?
Exactly. There was scarring, and by the time you were done with somebody, they looked like they had been through hell. I mean, they were completely bruised on the inside of the arm where these implants would go, and I'm sure word got around eventually. By the bad experiences that this was something that you wanted to stay away from. And so after a while, nobody came in for their Norplants anymore. Well, there is a new implantable. It's going to be called Implanon. It's instead of six different little matchsticks, it's going to be one.
One lighter?
One specific little matchstick.
One disposable lighter.
Yeah, so it's basically going to be the size of the old Norplant, but instead of having six different ones, it's going to be one. It's going to be good for 3 years, and apparently it's going to be a lot easier to remove. They are talking about a three-minute removal time with very little residual. It would be put in the inside of the arm just like the Norplant, but again, something that's coming in that may, you know, make that a good option for some people. Again, specifically for people who don't want to take anything every day and, you know, be not pregnant for the next 3 years.
And unlike the IUD, this could be something that people that hadn't had kids
that's
before
right.
could use.
That's correct.
And what about the male contraception?
That's, you know, that's good. There are people who are working on it right now. There have been some concerns with what happens to testosterone levels, not just sperm counts. Obviously, the goal is to get to zero sperm counts in people who take these pills. Some of these, you know, some of the volunteers for these studies have also shown decreasing testosterone levels, and that, as you can imagine, may not go over too well with some males who take this particular form of birth control pill.
I worry about this because here's what I think. I think there's going to be more pregnancy by guys saying they're on this pill, A, number one. B, number two, all the guys who are responsible enough and caring or concerned enough to put themselves on this male pill, right, as it were, are not the guys we got to worry about. These are not the deadbeat dads of the world. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is not going to do society any good, this male pill. I think it's going to hurt. And I would like for the guys who do actually get on the male pill to get some sort of a rebate from the government, as well as some sort of like a watermark or something like they put on the currency.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
And what would that do?
Well, women could verify whether the guy was on it or not. We are going to need some verification, or women are going to need some verification, or every Guido with an Italian horn medallion is going to be getting loaded on wine coolers on a Saturday night and telling some chick at a Red Onion that he's on this pill.
Well, I think more...
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think at the same time, this would be more people in a, you know, mutually exclusive relationship, possibly married people. This is the kind of situation where that pill may be of use, but, you know, that's probably a good year or two down the line. The next thing is something that's really exciting, and we've had patches now to that are porous and allow for slow leakage of hormones into a person's circulatory system. We've been using them for several years now for hormone replacement therapy for menopausal women. Now we have the first ever birth control patch.
And it doesn't fall off your penis when you're having sex?
No.
Interesting.
This is for women.
Oh,
and,
I see.
Essentially, they put this patch on either their hip, their butt, their lower abdomen underneath the belly button. And one patch is going to last about a week. You would have three patches in a pack. And so it would essentially work much like the birth control pill, where you have 3 weeks of getting a hormone in your system and then 1 week of a break and a bleed.
Now, when you pull the one patch off, right, and one of the benefits of this, a side benefit, would be removing some hair from some of these bras would be nice, too. You know, pull that one off. You know, they get that little happy trail from the belly button down to the crotch there. It could be used for that. And why not combine a few things, some hair removal and some birth control? But you put the patch on, you peel one off, you stick the other one on, right?
Okay, so,
Is that right?
I mean,
you couldn't leave it off. Could you leave it off for a day?
We could probably leave it off for a day, but essentially what they're going to talk to you about doing and the instructions for this are going to be that you would take it off and rotate. You would not want to put the patch on exactly the place, the new patch, on the place where the old patch just came off, simply because of the way the hormone is absorbed. Some of the adhesives can actually cause kind of a local irritation. Things get a little bit red. You wouldn't, and absorption can get affected, so you'd want to rotate. So basically you'd want to go from one place to the other and just kind of rotate, pick, let's say, three spots and go one, two, and three, and basically then take a week of a break and start the process over. The name of this one is going to be something like Ortho Evra, I believe is the
name.
And
these are all coming out?
These are all coming out in the next 2 to 3 years. The last one, and I want to mention before we get back to the calls, is something called Seasonal. Seasonal is going to be a birth, and many women are already doing this, taking birth control pills so that they do not get a period. I mean, people do this all the time around their honeymoon so that they don't bleed, let's say, during the honeymoon. Essentially, what this birth control pill will do is it will have 84 active pills that you will take in a row. So instead of 21 tablets and a week off for a total of a 28-day cycle with, let's just say, 12 periods a year, you will have 84 on and 7 off, giving you, let's just say, 4 cycles per year. So it will be a birth control pill you will take for 84 days in a row and have only 4 periods a year instead of 12 periods a year.
All right.
So that's some new stuff coming out.
New and uninteresting.
Okay.
No, we can't do the lightning round tonight. Dr. Ben would cramp himself. He'd really get lost. He'd be uncomfortable.
Is that the one where there's a bell goes off and you say...
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's the one. Okay.
Why I'll not? Tell you what. I'll tell you what.
Let's go crazy.
All right. Well, why don't we do... We'll do like a modified lightning round. We'll just do like a 5-minute lightning round. So,
the last 5 minutes, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we'll do it when we come back from the break. Okay. Yeah, we'll do the first 5.
All right.
Derry?
Derry? Derry, you've been waiting.
Derry?
Yes, you're
Hi,
26.
Derry. How are you doing?
Good. Great. What's up?
I was adopted, and I was told that most likely I received hepatitis B from my mother, and I'm a carrier, but I was told it was dormant.
Yeah. So you're not a chronic active hepatitis B carrier. You're...
No.
Okay.
No, and I found out when I had my first child and that I had it.
Right.
And, you see, my dad's a pediatrician, and nobody will give me any idea what's going on.
Why won't your dad?
I don't know. Maybe he thinks I'm going to die. I don't know.
No.
I mean, so it's just freaking me out more. So
Derry, just being a carrier.
Terry, with a T.
Terry. I'm sorry. So, Terry, just being a carrier does not really increase your risk for the things that we're really worried about with chronic hepatitis, and that would be for cirrhosis and, in some cases, for liver cancers.
Mm-hmm. I heard it can become active, though.
Okay, so an easy way to do that is just to... Do you have somebody who takes care of you, specifically an internist or a hepatologist, somebody specifically who deals with your... hepatitis issues.
My family doctor doesn't feel it's necessary.
That's overwhelmingly true. So, Terry, I would tell you is that at this point...
tell her to be quiet. Everyone, she's got 10 doctors telling her to relax.
Yeah,
so
you
relax.
Should relax.
You don't need one more.
Yeah, this is really not going to be an active problem for you.
I could really help you out around the office. I really could. I've done wonders with some of Drew's old patients.
Yeah.
I've yelled at them. people do need... Here's unfortunately what society has broken down into as far as patients. They're the people who have the pulsating softball-sized goiter on the forehead that they won't go get looked at. And then they're the people who are running to the doctor and demanding some vaccination every time they sneeze. There's not a lot of in-between. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you
get all kinds. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, you get the real pains in the ass. They think they're dying, and they gotta have something done about everything. And I know you guys are polite, but you got to start yelling at those people because I believe they need it. I think that's what they need.
Yeah.
I think it makes them feel better when you go, hey, nut job, you're not dying, and stop wasting my time, and stop screwing your insurance carrier and go the hell home. And by the way, there are people who do need me who are waiting out in the lobby right now. So get the F out of here.
You'd be a good receptionist in a doctor's office. You could triage all the these kinds of patients from the real patients.
Right. If I see anyone, I see you in here sooner than 12 months, I will put a bullet in your head. You want something to worry about? I'll give you something to worry about. Some buckshot in your ass. Now hit the road. I don't want to, unless you come in here dragging a bloody stump, I don't want to see you.
Wow.
That's what you need to do.
Right.
And I especially get a lot of old broads that are freaked out about their vagina. They're coming in every 5 minutes. You've got to get rough with those women. I've heard Drew on the phone with his old patients. Oh, no, Miss Wittenberg, no, you're not listening. You must go. No, it's nothing to worry. I may have been a little drunk, but we're in the back of a limo. I grabbed the phone out of the out of his hand. Next. I yelled, "Listen, you old codger, you go to the goddamn hospital told you to go." And I threw the phone back at him because I've been hearing this conversation for 10 minutes. He'd had.
Yeah.
He was thankful. He really was in his own screwed up wife. All right, let's talk to Chris over here, who's been on hold for 82 minutes with just a horrible question.
Right.
Chris.
Go for it.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. You want to know about the penis pump?
Yeah, and good and the bad about it.
Yeah. Well, they don't work, as far as I know.
They don't work?
No.
Okay. Why don't they?
I don't know. Why doesn't the graviton ray work? You know what I mean? Why doesn't anything that's supposed to work or not work?
Okay,
Well, listen, there's a magical device that makes your penis bigger that costs $39.95 that advertises in the back of jugs. Why doesn't it work?
Magic wand makes my penis grow.
It sucks blood into your penis, but they think they got it worked out mathematically, but it just doesn't do anything. Makes your penis bigger while the blood's in it, then the blood leaves, and your penis goes back to whatever size it was.
Huh. Okay.
Is your penis small?
Yeah.
All right, then you better start working on your tongue. That's what women want anyway. You become like a magician with that tongue of yours. You move it like an auctioneer. You go down on women, and they'll be happy. They won't worry about the size of your penis. All right, Chris?
All right, thanks.
All right, stop focusing on the penis.
Yeah.
Women hate guys who focus on the penis, not because of the penis, because they're the kind of guy who gets obsessed with his penis. All right, let me talk to Sarah. Sarah?
Yeah.
13?
Yeah.
Your boyfriend is in love with you?
That's what he says, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not into her? Into him?
Well, I like him right now.
Right.
He's just telling me he loves me and he wants to be with me forever, and I'm only 13.
Yeah. He's clingy. He's freaking you out.
I changed my mind a lot, and I'm just like, no, leave me alone.
Well, how old is he?
He's 13 also. He just turned 14.
Yeah, and you're his first girlfriend?
No, he's had a lot of other girlfriends.
A lot of other girlfriends. He's still got this clingy thing going.
Yeah, he says they're like one-time things, and he really, really loves me.
Right. Mm. You guys are going to get married, start your own business in Hawaii. That's what I was going to do when I was 13.
And, Adam, I just got to say this. I love you.
Thanks.
You are awesome.
Thank you, baby.
That's awesome.
Appreciate that. Well, look, is the guy freaking you out because he says he loves you?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I think you need to tell him you're freaking me out without freaking him out. But I think this one ain't going to go another 3 weeks anyway. Because you already kind of decided you're heading out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically done with this, right?
Yeah.
And the more clingy he gets, the further you get out of the relationship.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're basically calling to say you want to break up with your boyfriend.
Well, not right now, but I'm sure...
In the next 3 days?
He's not exactly, the one.
Yeah, well, what about, don't worry about the one.
Yeah,
you're 13. You enjoy
the one is a long way away.
Right. You enjoy the guy?
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you enjoy him and he's not doing anything weird to you physically, you hang in and see where it goes. Get to know him. Let's just tell him to calm down with the forever conversation, all right?
Okay.
And the good news is it won't be forever, because even if you guys get married in a couple of years, he'll dump you when he turns 40 and start banging his secretary. All right, so you got that to look forward to. All ladies do. Enjoy.
Hey!
Oh, yeah. Damn, he's right going smack dab in the middle of the round. Slowest 8.5 minutes of radio. Yeah, Dr. Drew is over in Italia. They're hanging out with the wives and the guineas. Dr. Ben filled in. OGBYN. I tell you, people pay him to look at their hooch all day. What a gig. I tell you, I love to get out of that after that.
That's my main man name.
Yeah, man. Let's check the time real fast. 11:52 and 37. 7 minutes and 30 seconds away from the top of the hour, straight up to the witching hour. Smack dab in the middle of that on the radio. Hot around. It's like a little bit of that hot, hot, hot. Let's hop on the phone, see what's dying. Let's move along. Hey, Katie.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's happening?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to know your boyfriend's got a large honker, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to know if it can damage you?
Yes.
No, I don't think it can hurt you physically. It can hurt your dad emotionally, though, when he sees that. I'll tell you.
Yeah, but you know, like,
when
he's like, "Hey, I'm going to
get
you this thing," and I'm like, "Oh,
that's therapy. Am I right, Doc? That's therapy." Hey, Katie, we got to check the time real fast. It's 11:53 and 15 seconds. That is 6 minutes and 45 seconds away from the top of the hour, straight up. Yeah, Katie, how big is it, sister?
It's, pretty large. It's, fat. And,
Well, don't get into too much detail. Ain't no fat.
I don't know.
You
know how measure it.
I don't need to know about that guy. It's pretty wide around, like a can of corn.
But
the
question is,
mm-hmm.
is, like, I've heard that some people have to get stitches because it's too big.
Oh, no. Dr. Ben, what do you hear about a episiotomy or something? What's going on? Let me check the time. 11:53 and 45. 6 minutes and 15 seconds. Wait, down there. Yeah.
Katie, just don't go there. I mean, if what's the point if you're going to get hurt?
But I heard it, like, can't you have an orgasm through your butt?
I did once, and that was
no,
just
really,
a wet fart.
You,
well, I,
yeah, it's good.
I do, you know, as far as the way your anatomy is going to work, that might help you. Yeah. But I can tell you, overwhelmingly, I think you're going to run into some problems here.
Katie,
asking for trouble.
Katie, don't you let him put that big ham in your butt. You hear me, oh, baby? It's going to split you in two. All right, now, baby. All right, just stay with the oral sex and the two. Hand job. Let's check the time real fast. 11:54, 30 seconds. That is 30 seconds, 5 minutes away from the top of the hour. You're smack dab in the middle of the light around. Fastest 8.5 minutes of radio. Dr. Ben filled in for Dr. Drew. And let me tell you something about Dr. Ben. Hi. We're going to take a little break. We're going to be back with more checks of the time after this.